B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
From the Town Fair Tire Studio, Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Yes, we're both actually here today. I think I can speak for you as well, Chris. I don't know why the hell we didn't just ask for this day off. Still be in bed, but be that as it may.
Well, one of us is still rocking their slippers.
We're here for you, the people. Yes, my UGG slippers. Yep. Came in just looking like a bum, like I usually do on Saturdays. I usually don't have the slippers, but what the hell? It's a long weekend. It's a holiday weekend. Hope your Thanksgiving was good. Yeah?
Yeah, it was. How was yours?
Excellent. Just
very good.
Day up to North Conway. I had a lovely dinner with my dad's girlfriend and some of her family.
Oh, that's
excellent.
Great.
All great. Two things off the top here. Going to be a loose show today. We do have the Sports Up Celtics show coming up at noon. We'll get to the manifesto by Kyrie Irving, the home and home that they just had with Brooklyn and all that. But there's really, honestly, if it was really truly up to me, but, you know, I'm a professional and we do have to talk sports, the sports channel, I could do 3 hours on how bad The Irishman is. Did you watch this?
No, I didn't see it.
Holy crap. I know movies are subjective, Chris, but if you like this boring, plotting, embarrassing mess of a film, I'm going to think one of two things of you as a person. One, you're either a liar and you don't want to disparage Martin Scorsese, who's one of the great auteurs of all time. I get it. He's at a wonderful canon, although he hasn't really truly made a great film since 1995's Casino. Fight me. and you just don't want to admit that Scorsese's a washed-up director, and you don't want to admit that. Or you're just an idiot who loves crap. The hype surrounding this movie, shame on me. I should know better. Like, when people really overhype a movie, it never turns out to be good. That's why I don't. Do you know about this Korean movie that's like all the hype right now?
Yeah, all the rage. What's going on?
What the hell's it called? Parasite. You got to see Parasite. Parasite. It's the best movie. Wow, what a twist at the end. I know it's going to be bad, so I'm not going to see it. I know. I just know. I'll wait. I'll wait till it comes out, and then I'll see it on Netflix, and I'll just be mad about it, just like this movie. Because if you can sit there and take The Irishman seriously with the bad CGI, trying to make these 80-year-old men look like they're 30 and not laugh, I don't want to know you. It's so bad, Chris. It's so bad. And it's historically inaccurate, too. Like, that's another thing. But the movie just stinks. It stinks. And if you get to the fight where the Irishman, Frank, goes and takes his daughter to go get retribution against the man at the shop who pushed his young daughter, and watch that fight. It's an 80-year-old man that they try to make like 30, and you could take it seriously, like, it's, and not laugh and sit there and be like, this movie is not garbage. Then you're just wrong. You're just wrong. There's so many parts of this 3.5-hour piece of crap movie that is just, it's some of the worst thing. It's the worst things you'll ever see in your life. So I don't know. There's just been so much about it, and so many people just all up my ass on Twitter because, oh, you don't like anything that's in the world. This is good. Scorsese makes great films. He used to. He doesn't anymore. The Irishman's garbage. I want you to see it just so you can see that I'm right about this, because you have decent. You have good taste. You really do, Chris. But
yeah, but you always say I have bad taste in movies, though.
Yeah, you like a lot of like the schlocky, like, you know, big explosions and, you know, kid movies and stuff like that.
Exactly.
I'll give you a pass on that. But
okay,
when it comes to actual, like, dramas and things of that nature, you have good taste.
Oh,
you should just see this and try to get through this and see that I'm on the right side of history when it comes to The Irishman. Oh, it's one of the great films of the year.
Is this in the theater?
It was, and they put it in the theaters just so it can be actually, it can be up for Best Picture. This is what they do now, but it was a Netflix exclusive.
Okay, yeah,
it was only in, like, limited theaters, it gets a... I don't know what the hell the deal is, but they put these movies in theaters as well so that it has a better chance of actually winning the Oscar. But it's a Netflix exclusive, so they just dropped like within the last two days.
Well, one of us has family that works for Netflix, so I won't be criticizing this film.
Oh, well, okay then. You've been bought and paid for. The other thing is, and this is more because I thought of
you. At least not publicly.
I thought of you on Thanksgiving after the meal with the games that were on, specifically the Cowboys and Bills game.
Yeah.
I want to know if you want to dial back a couple of things.
Nope.
You're not going to dial?
I am locked in.
You're locked in on Dallas still going to the Super Bowl.
I am in the take bunker. I think they are going to pull off one of those Giants, like Eagles runs, where everybody leaves them for dead, and then they turn it around and get hot in the playoffs. Nope. I am absolutely ingrained. I've dug in. I am dug in on the Cowboys.
Really?
Emotionally invested. It's not even logic at this point. It's just, it's almost spite, really. I mean, I'm just so emotionally invested in this pick that I refuse to change.
I can understand that. That's how I feel about Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, it's like with each passing week, it's like, see his numbers, puts up 400 yards and four touchdowns. You still want to say he's a bad quarterback? Yep, I do. Yeah.
Well, all you have to do, and I think I told you this, but all you have to do is remember this with Jimmy G. If you subtract the two Arizona games, this is before the Packers game, but if you subtract those two Arizona games, including the turnovers in the second game, he had 14 turnovers and 10 touchdown passes.
Oh, yeah.
And so, everybody's lit up Arizona.
And and Patrick Peterson's a shell of himself. Yeah. Ever since he got popped for the PEDs, he's not what he once was.
So you can look at there's still a way. There's still hope. There's still a path with Jimmy G. If you take out the Cardinals games, and I'm taking out the turnovers, too. I'm not counting the turnovers he had against the Cardinals and subtracting the touchdown passes. I'm saying if you take those games out overall, turnovers and touchdown passes, he had more turnovers than touchdown passes entering that game last week against the Packers.
It's just it's shocking to me, and I felt the same way in the game here, even though the weather was bad. Just the way that Dallas is not a 500 team, not with as talented as they are on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
It's just they're so poorly prepared and so poorly coached. It's amazing to me that even now, just a couple of days removed from it, that Jason Garrett is still employed, and that Jerry Jones is even defending him, like, immediately after that game.
Jerry Jones with Jason Garrett is like me with this Cowboys Super Bowl pick. He's in the take bunker. You know, he's too invested in it personally and emotionally to think logically. And, you know, somebody said something to me that was interesting about the Jerry Jones-Jason Garrett relationship. In Jerry Jones' mind, he discovered Jason Garrett. You know, Jason Garrett's his guy. He's responsible for it. It's like nobody thought this guy was going to be a head coach. And Jerry thought when he was a player for the Cowboys, this is a guy that can be a head coach. And so it's one of those things where if he succeeds, Jerry gets the credit. And for Jerry to fire him, it's Jerry admitting that Jerry failed, which is very hard for him to do because this was his pet project and this is his guy.
Yeah, because of that bad division and that the Eagles look like less of a threat by the week, I can understand, look, they can still win that division, have a home playoff game, and maybe get hot like the Giants did in 07 and in 11.
That's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm holding on to now.
But, boy, they are just a bad, undisciplined team. That was, I mean, they got completely rolled. So then the other thing was, in that game, do you want to dial back what you've said about Josh Allen in the past? Has he come along here in recent weeks?
Definitely not. I mean, that Dallas defense is a little bit – they're very talented, but they are a little bit predictable. And I think it was a short week, so they didn't really have the opportunity to throw a lot of wrinkles in there. And they probably didn't think they needed to, honestly. And Josh Allen, you know, proved them wrong, even though the best throw of the day came from John Brown, a wide receiver. But that's besides the point. I still think when push comes to shove that Josh Allen – can be confused, particularly against better defenses like the Patriots. I don't think he processes fast enough. He's not consistently accurate. And I think stupid teams like the Cowboys let him make plays with his legs.
Yeah, so that's what it is. I think his ability to extend plays, and he hadn't, you know, you see it in spurts. I just don't want to, considering how well Lamar Jackson plays and some of these guys, other quarterbacks that actually have some speed to their game, I don't know why they don't let Josh Allen do that a little bit more. I feel like they try to keep him in the pocket. That's where he's at his worst. I'm with you. I'm still dug in on Josh Allen because that was another thing I got chirped on. Like, so you're wrong about Josh Allen. Like, no. Like,
I mean, I think Brian Daboll's doing a great job with him.
Yeah,
you know,
they're doing the best that they can. But I don't think the kid can read a defense and hasn't been able to. And like you said, a better defense like the Patriots will be able to confuse him. But when he gets out of the pocket and can extend plays, okay, yeah, he can be a little bit of a threat. I just, as bad as the Cowboys were, the Bills feel to me like a team that's going to be able to actually win that wild card game.
And you think
Yeah.
Well, their opponent's going to be bad. I mean, it's amazing. If you look at the AFC, it's like, okay, hold on a second here. Somebody out of Pittsburgh, Oakland, Indy, Tennessee, or Cleveland is going to make the playoffs. One of those teams is going to make the playoffs.
And I think it's actually going to be Tennessee. If I had to pick one, I know they have – if you look at the schedules of those teams, they actually have the more difficult schedule down the stretch here. Yeah. But – I mean, Ryan Tannehill, I think, has been one of the better surprises in the league this year since he's taken over. I never thought that would be a sentence I would ever say in my life.
The old Miami mannequin.
I know, but 4-1 since he's since they benched Hawaiian Tebow there in Marcus Mariota, and he's got the highest completion percentage of his career. It's like over 73%. He's played pretty well.
He has.
That defense is pretty good. Like, that's the team. I think they would be the best for the league to get in at that 6 seed because you might get a more competitive game between 3 and 6, which is probably going to be. Well, Houston and or Baltimore, depending.
Oh,
on what
can you imagine that? Can you imagine if it's Buffalo and Tennessee? Now, obviously, Buffalo you know, would be in a position to you know, with that game. But it you're sort of looking at, do you know how many like situations you would get with people if those teams played, bringing up like the miracle in Nashville, that whole thing.
Oh right, yeah.
Can you imagine that? Oh my God.
Yeah.
Mr. Teams.
So all right. So you're dug in on both of those things.
I'm sorry, man. Yeah, I'm just dug in at this point.
I figured as much. I just thought you might want to come around on Dallas a little bit because they've been a mess. And even what with the holiday, there was no Felger and Maz yesterday.
Yeah.
You don't do your normal spot.
Yep.
Just some quick thoughts on that game. Do you feel like there? Because I feel like the narrative, at least on that show. And we even talked about it, Beadle and I, in the post game. You really can't glean too much from that game, and because of the weather, and it just weighed everything down.
I mean, I still think you have to tip your cap to the Patriots for the defensive job that they did, but the weather definitely was a factor. It was like an extra defender for them, and I think the biggest thing with the Cowboys, at least offensively, going into that game, was they had a lot of big plays. Dak Prescott led the NFL in passing plays of more than 20 yards going into that game. And I feel like really the deep ball was negated. The Patriots knew they didn't have to worry about it because the weather wasn't conducive to throwing it and the field wasn't conducive to guys, you know, making those type of sharp cuts on like a double move or something like that. So I think that made it easier, but it was still an impressive victory. And honestly, I looked at it from the Cowboys standpoint and I said, man, you know, you were in this game. I couldn't believe, I'll be honest with you, I thought it was a really poor craven decision by Jason Garrett to kick that field goal. I mean, you're 11 yards away. You need a touchdown either way at the end of the day to win that game. You either need the touchdown to tie it, and then you're hoping you can somehow go ahead. Or even if you kick the field goal, now you're down 4, and the only way to extend the game is get the touchdown, and you're that close against a defense that's really dominated you most of the day. I felt like you had to go for it. Plus, your defense is playing pretty well. The Patriots' defense is wounded and hobbled and not really producing, and you're going to have them backed up in their own end if you don't get it. I didn't understand that decision. I'm surprised more people haven't criticized that decision. It made no to me that field goal was useless.
Oh, Aikman thought it sounded like Aikman was going to like blow a gasket because at that point we were in the bar and waiting for the game to wrap up. It's 6 and change left. It's the deepest penetration the Cowboys have made all game. It felt obvious. Like, you're going to go for it, right?
You got to go
for
it.
So on the one hand, I was surprised. But on the other, was I really? Because it's Jason Garrett.
It's Jason
like, this
Garrett.
Is the kind
That's
of thing
MO.
That he's done time and time again over the last decade of being in control of that team. He plays meek. It almost felt like I was joking with Felger and Maz during the week, Chris, that it was like, are you just trying to make it look like a better outcome?
I really didn't.
That made no sense whatsoever.
It made no sense because I just look, you know, what's the risk-reward situation there? If you score... First of all, you were able to get a first down without getting in the end zone. It was, I believe it was 4th and 7, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So you don't even have to score a touchdown to continue the drive. You just have to pick up the first down. It's 4th and 7 from the 11. So go for it. You might, I mean, chances are maybe Dak scrambles. Maybe he comes up 2 yards short, right? So you don't get to the 4. But then you're turning the ball over to the Patriots on the 6, and they're all backed up with an offense that really had done nothing. I mean, the only touchdown the Patriots scored was off the block punt. So, you know, the odds of the Patriots taking that ball and driving it back down the other end and scoring, I'd say were pretty slim based on the way the Patriots offense was playing and the weather conditions. You really have nothing to lose at that point. I mean, just go for it. Try and win. Are you trying to win the game, you know, or not? And
no,
it just seemed like he just, I mean, that was the safest possible play. It's a 29-yard field goal. What does that do for you? You still need a touchdown to continue the game.
He coaches meek, and that trickles down to that team, and I think you even see that against Buffalo on Thursday.
So I'll be honest,
well.
And one of the reasons I'm still dug in on the Cowboys is that I feel like that loss to the Bills was really hangover from the Patriots' loss. I think they put a lot into that game. They were in the game, and then Jerry Jones came out afterwards and, you know, talked about how devastating the loss was, and then, you know, 4 days later you're playing. And granted, it's on Thanksgiving, but 4 days later you're playing. I feel like they didn't really turn the page from the Patriots' loss. That felt like a Patriots hangover to me.
Yeah, well, we'll actually hear from old Jarrah what he said after the game coming up next. And also, Chris has made the formal declaration after the Patriots win over the Cowboys, now 10-1. It's Belichick's team now. No longer Brady, just a sidecar. Poor old Tom. And that offense that's struggling, just still upset after all these wins, 10-1 and still kind of a grumpy Gus. But it's Bill's team now. So if you haven't read that column from Chris, we'll touch on some of that. Coming up next here, Gasper Murray, yes, we're here. And if you want to join the show, 617-779-0985. It's 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Gasper. Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's fourth and goal at the 6. Prescott out of the gun. 3 wide left, single back left. Prescott takes the snap. He fades back. He lobs left. Too short, incomplete. Well shy of Ezekiel Elliott. And the league's worst team on fourth down fails on fourth and goal from the 6. Buffalo's got the ball and a 23-7 lead.
I know Jason very well. I've had a wonderful opportunity to spend a football life with him. So I know him very well. And you know, without a doubt, you've seen it. Nobody is wants Jason, wants it to go. And I'm going to tell you this right now. He's got my back, too. Before we started this game today, we said this team's going to be tough to beat. Buffalo's a good team. They got it done. That's all I'm saying. This is not the time. Every decision that I make over the next month will be with an eye in mind to get us in the Super Bowl now.
That's old Jarrah after that hideous fourth down play towards the end of that game. Last ditch desperate effort by the Cowboys on Thursday and their loss to the Bills. And I just open it up with this because, you know, Chris has been dug in here for a while now. The Cowboys are going to be the representative of the NFC in the Super Bowl. Cowboys, Patriots. Is that right, Chris?
Yeah.
It's Gasper Murray, 98.5, a sports app. And I just, considering how hot-headed and reactionary that Jerry Jones has been in the past with things, and maybe I'm just thinking too much of the 90s still, because I am stuck in the best decade ever, mentally, always will be, Chris, that I just figured after a loss like that and two consecutive losses and as much talent as they have on both sides of the ball, that Jason Garrett will be out on his ass. And then right after the game, Jerry Jones, like you just heard, is defending him. He's got my back. I'm like convinced in some ways, like that liquor soaked brain of his, he feels like he can't fire him because gingers don't have souls. I can't fire an evil spirit. That's the deal I made with Satan himself, so I can keep living. Now, if you let me be, I'm going to go back up to my suite with this bottle of Johnny Blue and these buxom whores. He's almost lost a step, too. Or it's like you say, maybe he's just so emotionally invested because this is his guy. He was handpicked. He's been there so long.
There's also there's no longer blood that circulates to his brain because he stretched his face so much.
Right,
you know,
yeah, so. A lot of plastic. I got to try to keep looking young for these whores. He is just a creepy man. Who knows what secrets he has?
It'd be delicious to know, though. Right. Oh, man. That's a guy that definitely has some sort of dungeon beneath his manse.
But it's probably underneath the stadium. Like there's one extra secret level the elevator goes to. Like, oh, where's Jerry going? Well, we know. That's right. I'm going to the basement with this bottle of Johnny Blue and these buxom whores. I'll be back in 90 minutes. Frank the Tank, first up here on Gasper Murray this morning. Hey, Frank.
Hey, boys. Happy Thanksgiving.
You as well.
Look, Jerry Jones lost the cheese on his fastball years ago. I mean, the guy really should just shut it down, in my opinion. Look, real quick before I get to the Thanksgiving Day games, Lamar Jackson is an awesome talent, and I love watching the guy play. But I'm with you, like, comparing him to Michael Vick right now, no, he ain't there yet. And there's no sadder case in football than Michael Vick. A guy who had all the talent in the world, and just because he was too stupid to study up on the game a little better and grow and learn how to be a better pocket quarter, he wasted his talent, in my opinion. I was never more excited to see a player come out of college than Michael Vick and Randy Moss. And, I mean, in my opinion, Vick kind of threw his career away, not just because of the dogfighting thing, but because he was just too stupid to study. So hopefully Lamar Jackson will learn to be a better quarterback as time goes on, because you're not going to outrun everybody, kid. Look, the Thanksgiving Day games, there was some chatter during the week about having it not be the Cowboys and the Lions anymore. I can't stand that kind of talk. They're trying to change too much stuff in sports. There's certain things that should just stay the way that they are. It should always be the Cowboys and the Lions against somebody. And then the night game, I like the night game. It gives you a chance to see two other teams. You know, don't change it. They're changing enough stuff in sports. And, you know, in the one sport that they should change stuff in baseball to make it better, they move like molasses on it. And football, which is a great sport, leave it alone. I don't want to see other teams other than the Cowboys and Detroit play at those times. And let the night game be two different teams. You get four other teams anyway besides those two. Leave it alone.
I'm with you on that, Frank. I don't know if is there league chatter about that?
Well, I know over the years. I mean, that's one reason we have the night game now, is that there was a sense in the league like other teams were annoyed that there was this monopoly on Thanksgiving that the Lions and Cowboys have. So I'll be honest.
There's something to be said for tradition, though.
There
is. Keep those
and I'm cool with the Cowboys playing, but being saddled with a lifetime of crappy Lions games on Thanksgiving, particularly as the early game, the Lions have had their day. Like, I'm good on the Lions playing on Thanksgiving. I've also covered some of those games. Like, I covered a Patriots-Lions Thanksgiving Day game. Terrible Thanksgiving spread for a stadium that hosts a Thanksgiving game every year.
Was that 2010, that one?
Yeah, because Deion Branch was on the team.
Yeah.
So between that, you know, I just sort of feel like I think you can yank it away. Like, if you want to keep it in the NFC North and rotate through those teams, I kind of get that, you know, Midwestern tradition. But the Lions, like, enough. I mean, they are one of the, you know, biggest loser franchises in sports, really.
Yeah, and on Lamar Jackson, I think Frank was going back to something I said Wednesday, which was kind of like a, you know, agenda-free Friday that we did on Felger and Mass before the break. And recency bias is obviously one of those terms we use a lot in sports radio,
true.
And I try not to that much because it gets overused. But in the case of Lamar Jackson, I can't help myself because the recency bias towards Lamar Jackson, and especially I feel like it's people like under 30 that already want to say he's better than Mike Vick. It just sounds to me like you didn't see Mike Vick play. I just think it feels premature. Lamar Jackson's been great for the league. He looks like he's going to end up being the MVP of the league. And he's been all of their games, I feel like the Ravens games going forward should be in primetime because the guy's must-see TV.
Yeah, definitely. He's been great.
But to say he's already better than Mike Vick, again, what you're saying to me is you didn't watch Mike Vick during the early 2000s. Mike Vick went into Lambeau Field and beat the Green Bay Packers when that was a virtual impossibility.
Yeah.
So until he wins a playoff game, like, pump the brakes on Lamar Jackson.
No, I mean, he's been incredibly dynamic. And I would say I think he's ahead of Vick as a passer at this point. And so everything Frank was saying, what you hear on Lamar Jackson is that he does have that football savvy. He is willing to put the time in. You know, he is willing to be able to study up and be able to actually decipher a defense and read a defense. Now, look, he has an offense that is built specifically for his talents, and I think that really helps. He'll have to grow more as a traditional quarterback, but I think he is ahead of Vic in that regard because, you know, Vic was out there pretty much freelancing for the most part.
Yeah.
Jackson is somebody who does have a degree of sort of football acumen that he's applying in some of these games. The other thing I would say, just in terms of the recency bias, like, people start talking about, I've never seen a quarterback run like this, and you go back and forth, and you're right about Vic, but, like, people, I'm like, do people not remember Randall Cunningham and some of the stuff he did and how unbelievable he was? And that was sort of a point in the league where it's like they really frowned upon the running quarterback. You know, it's a little different now. It's opened up. But, I mean, even some of the things that Randall Cunningham could do early in his career were amazing and incredible. And I look at that and it's like, okay, Lamar Jackson's having a great season and he's a fun player to watch, but he's not the first guy to be doing this stuff.
Yeah. But I will agree with Frank, though, in terms of what you're saying. Like,
even Cam Newton.
The leadership qualities that you see with Lamar Jackson, some of the stuff that you read, you know, so their center blew out their knee in that last game.
Yeah.
He was like, you know, he got up and made sure he had a seat at the front of the plane so he didn't have to hobble at the back of it. Like, the kid puts in the effort and he comes off as a good leader.
He does.
Mike Vick, that used to make me crazy because I loved him. I wanted him to be, you know, like, he was a phenom, and I wanted him to be, like, the face of the league, and he was trending that way, but boy, was he lazy. And just do yourself a favor, if you're too young to remember this, just Google Ron Mexico, Mike Vick. That's a guy that cared a little too much about Pound Town. Like, that he and Jerry Jones, nowadays, like, young Mike Vick and Jerry Jones, they would get along like gangbusters. You want to come up to the suite and party with these whores? Ron Mexico would be there. 100% guaranteed. You want me to watch film on this upcoming game against Green Bay or the Vikings? No, I'm going to go party with old Jarrah because he's got these buxom whores upstairs. All right, I want to get to your column that you had just a few days ago with the Boston Globe.
Yeah.
It's now Bill Belichick's team. If there's been any questions, it's, oh, no, it's like 50-50. It's Brady, it's Belichick. No, Chris has made the declaration. I'm sure it was painful to have to write. It's Belichick's team now. It's Belichick's team now after the Patriots are 10-1 over their win over the Cowboys, and they get the Houston Texans tomorrow night in primetime. We'll get to that after the Sports Hub headlines here on Gasper Murray.
Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Got guys with a lot of weak immune systems, so it was rough today, though. We had a lot of guys come in here and got sent home, and, you know, hopefully hydrate and, you know, by the end of the week. But, you know, those are tough situations. You know, you don't kind of know how you're going to feel, you know. But like we talked about last week, like, Cannon was a guy who was sick all week and, you know, fought through the game. So we got a lot of tough guys, but we got to kind of see how it goes throughout the week.
Patriot safety Devin McCourty after one of the practices within the last couple of days. The Patriots get ready for the Houston Texans on Sunday night. Talking about the sickness that has run rampant through the Patriots locker room. They have 17 players listed on the injury report heading into tomorrow night's game.
Yeah.
And most of these guys are on there. I mean, Edelman's on with a shoulder.
More than half, nine yeah. are on with some form of the illness.
So myriad injuries, but yeah. I mean, and Cannon, it sounds like Cannon was patient zero. And if you heard or saw even some of the footage that they showed, you know, the Patriots put up on their website, you know, the locker room footage post-game, Marcus Cannon looked like a ghost. Like, you know, credit to him. And Belichick was talking after that game last week against Dallas, too, about how Cannon, you know, really fought through that. And it's like sometimes you think, like, okay, maybe they're just pumping the tires of a certain player here. No, he was in rough shape. So, I don't know. I don't feel great about that. You know, all these guys dealing with a bug, like, sometimes that catches up with you. They'll be in this dome tomorrow night. I'm sure it'll be a little bit hot. You're traveling here. I think despite the record of Bill O'Brien and the Texans against this team and how stupid he has played against them, that last game, the opener last year, remember the Gronk? He didn't challenge the Gronk touchdown. He said, that's not my job. Like, the stupidity factor is going to come in tomorrow night when it comes to Bill O'Brien in some way, shape, or form. Ah, and another thing I feel confident on heading into tomorrow night's game, it's Jim's luck, just like I had the under last week, by the way. Pat on the back. Will Fuller and his stone hands, at some point, that's going to come into play tomorrow night. I know his last game, he was great.
He was great in that last game.
Pretty good with the deep ball. But that the mark on him since he's coming to the league out of Notre Dame, and even at Notre Dame, every once in a while, frying pans for hands, and it's going to show up again tomorrow night. You watch. In the biggest moments, Will Fuller tends to wilt, and you'll get one of those clang balls off his hands.
So, well, what I'm encouraged by is you're saying he'll make it through the game. Because
the
guy
gets
hurt.
Too, yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who, like, would get injured walking down the street and chewing gum at the same time. That's been his biggest issue, is he can't stay on the field. You know, I have some fear with this game just because I feel like in the past it's pretty much been like, okay, shut down DeAndre Hopkins and that's all they have. But now Kenny Stills, who's played well against the Patriots in the past, he hasn't really done much for the Texans this year, but he's on that team. Fuller's healthy, or at least healthy enough to play. They have a nice running game this year with Carlos Hyde, Duke Johnson out of the backfield. Darren Fells has, you know, he makes some plays that Ryan Griffin kid out of UConn, who's a local kid, you know, who's now with the Jets, he always seemed to somehow get psyched out like Bill O'Brien against the Patriots. He'd be open, they'd throw him the ball, and he wouldn't come down with it. Well, Fells makes some plays, Jordan Akins makes some plays for them at tight end. I feel like they have other places to go now. If the Patriots and if Stephon Gilmore takes away DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, it feels like it's going to be more of a challenge for the Patriots defense, but I do think that they're legit. It's no longer now in these recent weeks, and I know Philadelphia was a little bit undermanned, but with Philly, and I know the weather too, with the Cowboys and the job that Stephon Gilmore did against Amari Cooper, like, they're, at the very least, even if you still think, like, well, they played a lot of bad competition earlier in the season, the secondary's legit. Like, you don't have to worry about that Patriots secondary, and I think, yeah, there'll be a bit of a challenge tomorrow, but I do like the Patriots. They get the check mark defense over the Houston offense, but it could be a more of a challenge if these guys are all sick and they're dealing with that kind of thing. But your bigger takeaway coming out of the Cowboys game, and this has been now trending here for a few weeks though, Chris, is Tom Brady now truly officially a sidecar. You've made the declaration in the Boston Globe.
I don't think I ever said sidecar.
I'm putting words in your mouth. Okay. But it's Bill Belichick's team.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, this is a debate we have all the time, right? It's one of the great sports debates. Who is more responsible for the Patriots' incredible run of success? You know, chicken or the egg, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady. And it goes back and forth, back and forth. And I think if you had gone back to Super Bowl 52, right, the aftermath of that game, what do you think people's answer would have been?
Oh, Brady.
Brady.
Without
right?
question. That's coming what I was saying.
Coming off an MVP season, sets the record for passing yards in the Super Bowl with 505. Bill has the curious and still inscrutable decision to bench Malcolm Butler on defense. They lose that game. And now you sort of fast forward to where we are now. The Patriots won another Super Bowl last year. They win it probably with their, I would say, least impressive team since the 2001 team, a team that just got hot at the right time, last year's Patriots, I mean. And this year, it's all about the defense. You have a record-setting, potentially historic defense, and you have a struggling, grinding offense. Also, I can't help but notice, and I think we've seen this from week to week, have you noticed the last couple of weeks, like after these victories, 17-10, 13-9, old school football, defensive football, Patriots offense
special
really not doing much, special
in.
Teams factoring. You practically have to pry Belichick off the podium with a crowbar. How happy he is winning these games. Whereas Brady, a little bit of brevity there with these post-game press conferences.
I feel like you've got a minute and a half tops.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, he was more pleasant. He was pleasant last week after that game. It wasn't like Philadelphia where he was sullen and seething. But, you know, Bill's up there, and it's like, any more questions? You guys want to ask anything else about the way he talks about Stephon Gilmore, you know, one of our best players, you know, that was one of the best plays, all the stuff. It's like, any more questions? Anybody want to ask any more questions about our defense or special teams? Like, you know, so when I look at
feeling
that,
it.
Yeah, I feel like Bill's kind of basking in this season, and I feel like it's an ego boost for him because they're really doing it, you know, without Brady having a great season and without a prolific offense. And a big part of that is what Bill saddled him with. But the reality is that, yeah, this is more like the early years where it's the offense is a complementary piece. It's not the centerpiece of the team.
Yeah, to use Adam Jones' term, like after the Super Bowl last year, he got his groove back. Like Bill got his groove back. Because after that loss to the Eagles and the questionable decisions and benching Butler and having the likes of Johnson Badamosi out there, I know, like I've since had it revoked, Chris. I know that I'm no longer a card-carrying member of the Brady Bobo Club. You and the others have taken it away. But after Super Bowl 52, puts up 500 yards, the game that he had, it's like, well, no, obviously Tom's the more important part. That is completely shifted the other way.
Yeah. No, it's true. And I just want to say, by the way, and you can be offended at this all you want, but those of us who are in the Boohoo Brady Club feel like you are the Kyrie Irving of the Boohoo Brady Club.
Oh, that's cold. Wow. I'm that kind of a wishy-washy giant C, huh? Wow. That's maybe the meanest thing you've ever seen. You said to me, Chris.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, Jim, because in the grand scheme of all caps life, it doesn't matter whether you're in our club or not. But I'm just letting you know how we feel.
Yeah, we'll get to that diatribe by that a-hole coming up in the Sports Hub Celtics show. Want to go to Jaguar in the car, though. We were talking about Lamar Jackson a couple of seconds back. Go ahead. Hey, Jaguar.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Not bad. What's up?
So, quick question for you guys. After his pro day, Lamar Jackson made a comment saying that he could run a 4.34. If that's valid, how would you defend that? Would you put a corner or have him spy with a safety or something? Because you can't put a linebacker on him.
Well, no one's figured it out yet. Right. I mean, you know, I think that I would probably go spy with a faster defensive back. But that's the great thing about that offense is that if you go lighter and faster to try and match Jackson's speed, they have a great offensive line and a hammer and Mark Ingram, and they just run it down your throat. That's why teams haven't been able to stop. Also, you get all those guys up near the line of scrimmage because you're worried about Lamar Jackson. And then you have guys, you know, like Mark Andrews, the tight end, and Marquise Hollywood Brown running behind you, and Jackson will put it on him. That's why it's so tough. But with a guy that fast, the other thing, too, is with a guy that fast in third down situations, Jim, it almost, like, precludes you from playing man-to-man defense. Because if your secondary turns their back to him and he takes off, you're screwed.
Yeah, that second half that he had against the Seattle Seahawks, going back maybe like a month now.
Yep.
That was the game. I was like, oh, this isn't a fluke. Like, this is for real. Because Bobby Wagner, who is maybe the best all-around linebacker in the NFL.
Wagner or Kuechly?
Yeah, got made a fool. And even after the game, he's like, yeah, he was saying, like, I'm paraphrasing, but he was like, yeah, I don't know, man. Like, there's not much we can really do with this kid.
Yeah, and Wagner's not slow. Like, Wagner's a 4.5 guy, 4.4 guy, and he couldn't catch him.
Let's go to Billy in New Hampshire on one of the games from Thanksgiving. Go ahead, Billy.
Hi, this is Billy from Boston.
All right, go ahead.
All right, I had a question about the, I don't know if you saw the Saints and Falcons on Thanksgiving, but there was a play call that seemed really bad that confused me. They kicked the field goal first and 10 in the fourth quarter with 2 minutes left.
Yep.
Do you guys see that?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. And I understood the logic behind it. They're saying we need both of these things. Let's get the field goal. Let's get the onside kick, which they ended up getting, and then we'll go for the touchdown. They're trying to conserve time. They're saying we need both of these things. We're in position for this one now.
It seems so dumb, though, because they were down there at the 25-yard line with first and 10. Why not go for the touchdown there? Because are you going to get a better chance than that? You can kick the field goal after you score that touchdown.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think the reality is either way you do it, you need the field goal. I think they were saying, let's take the field goal now, conserve the time. They also had three timeouts, because I was listening. That was the other part, is that if they didn't get the onside kick, they had three timeouts, and by kicking the field goal at that point, there was enough time for them to use the timeouts and still get the ball back.
And they recovered that onside kick. They had three in that game from Younghoe Koo.
It's so funny. So I didn't see the first part of that game. I didn't know. So I saw the back-to-back onside kicks, but they recovered three?
Yeah, it was three.
Then the Patriots, it's too bad they let him go. They should have kept
him. Maybe it's three in the year, but there was definitely two in that game.
Yeah, no, they had back-to-back. On back-to-back possessions, they were able to do it.
All I know is that field goal cost my friend $4,000.
Are you serious?
Yeah, yeah. And he called me in a frenzy. He kept texting me, and I was like, I don't care about this. Because I was like, between that game and the stupid Irishman that took me 3 days to get through that god-awful movie.
Yeah.
But he's just like, I can't believe you're doing this. This is going to cost me. And it's like, well, don't gamble on sports, man. This is why I don't really gamble on sports, because it's going to make you have a heart attack.
You had to be excited, me in a frenzy. You had to be a little excited that your Falcons were screwing your friend.
I was not. They're not my Falcons. Chris is referencing when I worked in Atlanta. Our god-awful PD used to make us refer to those awful teams in Atlanta as our. So,
but it's in your heart now, though.
No,
it started out as a mandate, and it became a way of life.
Come home from work every night, look myself in the mirror, and say, I hate you. What have you done? Have some balls and refer to these teams as the suck that they are. But no, it's our Falcons, and our Hawks and our Braves. And
you see Trey Young, your boy Trey Young, dropped 49 last night.
No, he's the real deal. Him and Doncic looking pretty good.
The Hawks.
We'll continue to take your Patriots calls, anything football related to. We will take that at 617-779-0985. Again, the sickness. Will the sickness end up tripping up the Patriots tomorrow night against the Houston Texans? And also some interesting comments that Bill Belichick made about one certain player on the Houston Texans who I love. Okay. We'll get to that coming up next here. Long commercial-free segment that will segue into the Sports Hub Celtics show, 98.5 Sports Hub.
TD Garden will be heating up this winter as your Boston Celtics look to defend home court. Catch upcoming matchups against the Heat, Nuggets, Cavs, and Sixers. Visit Celtics.com/tickets and secure your seats today.
This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Yeah, man, I think he defines an NFL receiver. If you don't put an NFL receiver in a dictionary, it's put his picture next to it. Gets open and catches the ball. Doesn't matter what the route is. Doesn't matter what the coverage is. Doesn't matter where the ball's thrown or what the situation. First and 10, fourth and goal. He's very, very productive. And he has such a variety of skills and routes. You know, he can really do it all.
Patriots head coach Bill Belichick with a gushing review of the guy who I think is the best wide receiver in the NFL. That's DeAndre Hopkins, who the Patriots will see tomorrow night against the Houston Texans. I just think with best hands, if nothing else, Chris, you want to make an argument for Michael Thomas. I can understand it. And a few others in the league. But to me, like Hopkins, just with the hands, I like his swag and everything else. Like his ability to go over the middle, he ain't afraid. Like, yeah, he has a bit of the diva thing a little bit to his game with wide receivers.
Not that much, though. He's more in the Andre Johnson category of sort of just quietly go about your business.
Right, he goes about it quietly. I love him. And it was nice to hear. I mean, Belichick's going to pump the tires pretty much of anyone in the opposition anyway, even if he's just struggling and it's a team like the Rams a few years ago, and it's like, you know, he'll just talk about Johnny Hecker. So he's want to do that. But in Hopkins' case, like, he's 100% right. Like, he's a real threat. And you got to think, I would think Gilmore gets him tomorrow, or...
Yeah, I mean, there's two things you can do. I mean, you could either say put Gilmore on somebody like Fuller and double Hopkins, but my guess would be best on best. I mean, that's the way to go. The Patriots play more man defense than anybody in the league, and you let, you know, Gilmore try and wipe him out, which he did a pretty good job against Amari Cooper. Obviously, no catches there. There were some catches that were controversially taken away. I know we didn't touch on that. I thought those were horrendous calls, the tripping calls. And even I thought even the hold on Tyron Smith was not a great call.
Although the end, towards the end of the third quarter, that I think that changed the whole complexion of the game. It would have been first and 10 of the Patriots 35. That hold, which seemed a little bit iffy.
Yeah, I thought that was a dubious.
Brings
hold.
It back, and it kills that drive, and it killed all the offensive momentum of the Cowboys. And that, to me, was one of the five biggest plays of that game.
I agree, and not to go on a tangent, but just in that regard, like I looked at that play, and that play pretty much happens on every down in the NFL, but it reminded me of the old sort of Ed Hockley call of the defender was simply overpowered.
Yeah,
like that's
sure.
What it felt like. It's like, okay, you're getting overpowered here. You have nowhere to go, and you know it's not really a hold because he's let go. But you know, he had you, and you were trying to move, and you weren't going anywhere because he's that good. But yeah, you're right on Hopkins. I mean, Hopkins is a great player, and that's what I think could be the difference this time for Houston. Again, I just think they have more weapons and they have more answers outside of Hopkins. Belichick's not going to let Hopkins beat him.
Yeah, and you like Watson, right?
I love Watson. Yeah, I'm a big Watson guy.
Yeah, I do too. There's a couple of things about his game that irk me. And I saw this last. So
yeah, go ahead.
They frustrate me because they're so talented.
No one watches more AFC South football than you. So go ahead, break it down for me.
And he holds onto the ball too long, and he takes too many sacks. And I know outside of Tunsil, that offensive line it hasn't been all that great.
Good.
But some of those are on him. And then his intermediate passes, especially over the, you know, in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
they tend to get knocked down, like, at the line, or they get tipped at the line. They lead to interceptions. You saw in this last game that they played against Indianapolis, and you've seen, if you watch Houston with any regularity, you see it a bit. He needs more trajectory on his ball. And it's just one of those things, like, I feel like you can coach that up. I love him. I love him at the podium. He's one of those guys, like, sometimes you'll talk, you know, these, you ask a quarterback about a certain play, and they almost treat you like you're an idiot because you don't know the game as well as I do. Like, he stands up there, and he'll break down a play and simplify it for you. And I like hearing him talk. Like, he wants you to, like, almost, you know, learn the game the way that he has learned the game. And I appreciate him. He comes off as a good leader. I think he's great for the league. But there's parts of his game that I just feel like, you got to get over this hump, and you could be a transcendent talent in the
NFL. Does hold the ball too long. I agree with that. I think that's sort of part and parcel, though, of quarterbacks who tend to be a little more creative. Like, you know, Russell Wilson takes a ton of sacks.
Yeah.
But he also makes a ton of plays.
Bad offensive line, too.
And Watson will hold onto the football and make a play where you're like, man, I can't believe he made a play out of that. You know, I think his accuracy is good for a younger quarterback. And I just like his resolve, you know? Like, I think about that game. You know, remember the game they lost to open the season against the Saints?
Yeah.
That was a great game.
I think it's one of the best games of the year.
And the way he led them back in that game, and I honestly feel like if there had been, like, time left on the clock and he'd gotten the ball, they would have won. And to me, that's the highest praise you can give a quarterback, when you're like, oh, I don't want this guy to have the ball with time on the clock at the end in the last possession. And I think Watson's that type of quarterback.
Yeah, so nine of these guys are the Patriots dealing with the flu going in tomorrow. Like, I don't feel great about that. Like, I do like him in the spot, just considering the history of Bill O'Brien and the dumb mistakes he's made against the Patriots in the past. And I just, you know, there's going to be things, again, it's a lock that Will Fuller's going to have a bad drop in this game tomorrow night. Yep. But the sickness thing, and they're now on, what, their fourth kicker this year? That was the other thing. So I looked at my phone at one point waiting for dinner on Thanksgiving, and it's, so they're an appendectomy for Nick Folk, who I actually started to feel pretty good about. I know he had a couple of misses last week, but that was the weather, and there was, you know, especially that one before the half, no one expected him to make. But now he's out, cut, and they bring in Kai Forbath? Ugh. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't feel great about that either. So,
but at least Forbath has kicked there before.
True, yeah. Former Houston Texan, but my buddy who's a Vikings fan immediately texted me. He's like, you know how many extra points I've seen this a-hole miss? Good luck.
Oh, so, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, they're scraping the bottom of the barrel now with the kickers, as you mentioned. It's the fourth one. It was Gostowski to Mike Nugent and now Folk with this appendectomy, and you bring in Kai Forbath. It's a challenge. There's no question. I mean, as good as the Patriots special teams are, that's been one area of instability for them this year. But the good news, I mean, again, he's kicked there before, and I mean, it's in a dome.
Yeah, they're missing the Cowboys kickers missing him in the dome. They're all gutless weenies, Chris, and like
you know how I feel about that rule. First of all, I mean, again, it's like golf, you know, for those kickers, right? You know, one bad swing and all you're thinking about is shanking, and it's so these extra points that used to be like gimmies for them. You know, you miss one, and you start thinking about missing them. And then you start thinking about missing the next kick if it's a field goal. And that's what it is. I mean, it's a very mental sort of profession. And that's why I've never liked this 33-yard extra point.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of it. I'm not a fan of the rule. I mean, I don't find watching people who are very good at what they do, the best people in the world at what they do, fail. Like, I'm not someone who watches, like, American Ninja Warrior because I want to see somebody fall off, you know, and make a fool of themselves. Like, I don't find failure inherently entertaining. Apparently, Bill Belichick does.
Oh, I typically do, but in the
advocated for this rule.
In the case of the extra point, it's not one of those things I want to have to think about. I never want to have to think about that as a fan of the team, the Patriots.
I think
or
they should just make
the
touchdown 7 points.
Yeah,
forget it. Stop the kicking. Just give them the 7 points. Let's move on.
So, while I like him in the spot, there are little intangibles now going to this game again. The sickness, the kicker, and I don't know. The Houston Texans have a couple extra days to prepare for this game. They last played on Thursday night, so that's another thing to consider, too. So, Patriots,
they'll probably, you know, turn up the temperature in that dome, Colts style, you know?
Yeah, so there's some things there that have me a little uneasy, as you have the Patriots and Texans tomorrow night. Chris will be on the pregame there with Beadle. I'll be in the postgame right here on the Sports Hub with kickoff at 8:20, right? 8:20, 8:25-ish. Tomorrow night here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. All right, we're going to get the Sports Hub headlines from Sean Silver. We bid adieu to Brendan Glasheen. Sean comes in, and then right after that, we'll get to the Sports Hub Celtics show here on 98. Game.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.